Speak, O Lord, your servant heareth.
Amen.
Please be seated. If you ask people why they come to church, some will say, I want to be closer to God, to feel God's presence, to deepen my awareness of the presence of God. These wonderful spiritual things, and wham, they come to church and they get hit with Luke 14, which is just kind of mind-boggling. As we read this text, we're confronted with a pretty unyielding statement about what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. I ask you this. Can we take it seriously? Does it mean what it says, that to be a disciple means to give up everything that we may hold dear, even members of our family? This is hardly a comforting message. It's one of these passages that all across the world, pastors are praying that they don't have any visitors on that day if this has to be preached, because it forces you to ask such fundamental questions that we're not usually capable of asking. And we even don't even know how to bring them to God. How do we make sense of this passage? I suggest we start by looking at another passage. This is a thing that's often will help you if you run across a passage that you don't understand. First of all, never take a passage by itself. Always look at the context and around it. Then, using that, let's look forward to another passage from Luke, which says, you cannot serve God and wealth. There's an awareness in Jesus' teaching that there's an inherent conflict between our service to God and the acquisition of goods. Both make competing claims upon us. Now, let's be clear. I don't believe that Jesus we know in Luke hates the rich. I don't believe that Jesus we know in Luke thinks that wealth is a necessary evil. But there are strong connections in Luke between the misuse of wealth and the fraudulent acquisition of wealth and greed. How else do we account for the massive wealth acquired already by the staggeringly wealthy? People who will spend millions of dollars to send their children to the best schools. How do we make sense of people who are ostensibly in the center, the very center of our healthcare system, that is the pharmaceutical companies, that they could, without a thought of what it means to the community at large, that they could manufacture pills, drugs, some of them with the smallest amount of less than a teaspoon is enough to kill an elephant. That these people had no compunction at doing what they did. And they would say, we're just making money. We're just doing our job. This is not what Jesus is talking about. This is what Jesus is opposing. Wealth and greed are clearly manifest in themselves, in the oppression of the poor, or in the inability to engage fully in community. I think of this time and all the other storms we've had in the past, suddenly the goods that people desperately need go sky high in price, as people do price gouging. There's not enough water, so here a gas station has already amassed many, many, many bottles of water and sells them at $5 and $10 a piece. Motivated by greed, they give up any sense of sharing in the community. In order to follow God's commands about our wealth and possessions, we need to ask God some questions, some basic questions about wealth, such as, what is God going to do with my wealth and possessions? Or what is wrong with my wealth and possessions and having them? Well, part of it is, our possessions have the power to demand our lives from us. You know, I can't believe that the people in the pharmaceutical industries and other places where there's true corruption and greed. I can't believe that they started out that way. I really think it has to do with the experience of getting can be so heady. The experience of winning can be so powerful. The experience of gathering in for your sake takes our life from us. What is at stake regarding my wealth and possessions? In what or in whom do our loyalties lie? Where do we put our trust? Where do we put our sense of faithfulness? Thus, Luke sets up a contrast: God or wealth. More aptly put, God or the love of wealth. Whom will we serve? God calls us to faithful living with hearts of love and faithfulness to the community that God established in creation. It is not at all wealth versus God, but how will we allow our faith in God to actually direct our lives in accordance with the gospel? I'd like to read that again. It's not wealth versus God, but how will we allow our faith in God to direct our lives in accordance with the gospel? These passages from Luke 14 are actually Jewish rabbinic commentaries on the Old Testament law, found in Deuteronomy 6. Jesus, the rabbi, is telling his followers what is at stake if they choose to be his disciples. There is terrible risk. What does it mean to take up the cross and follow Jesus? And what does that have to do with our relationship with our families? The Old Testament law that Jesus hearkens to so often is from Deuteronomy 6, and it reads like this: love the Lord your God. If you know this, if you know the law, you can recite it with me. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. Jesus is telling us that this is actually serious. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. At this and every moment, God comes to us with this question: do you love God more than anything else? What would that look like if we truly loved God more than anyone else? And what does that have to do with this strange, weird, troubling passage that says you have to hate people in your family? The word used by Jesus in Luke to describe the relationship between God and family is hate. This is astonishing. What can it possibly mean? So much of the Bible, both Old and New Testament, speak of love of neighbor. What can it possibly mean to say that we are to hate those who are closest to us? Mother, father, wife, children, siblings, are to hate those who are closest to us? Doesn't this make Jesus into a kind of monster, encouraging us to hate the very people that everywhere else in the Bible tells us that we are to love? I'd like to turn this passage around and reveal the meaning of Jesus' words about hating our families. The Bible tells us over and over and over that we are to love our neighbors, even to the point of dying for them. The Bible tells us over and over and over that we are to love our neighbors, even to the point of dying for them. So what does it possibly mean when Jesus tells us that we are to hate those very same people that elsewhere we are told to love? In 1933, Adolf Hitler came to power in Germany. He had a message that people wanted to hear. People all across the German society, they wanted to hear this message. It was a message of hate. The hate of Jews and all others who are not true Germans. During this period, the Christian churches of Germany collapsed into blind obedience to the Nazi dictator. The result was the murder of at least 70 to 85 million people. Think of that. 70 to 85 million people were killed. One of the few Christians to stand up to Hitler was the pastor and theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Did you know Bonhoeffer? Does that name ring any bells? Dietrich Bonhoeffer? No? Okay. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about him. Next week, I'll give you a quiz. Bonhoeffer came from a very wealthy and distinguished family in Berlin. He would have been completely safe if he just kept his mouth shut and preached a bland, empty gospel like most pastors at the time preached. And not only pastors, but virtually the entire professional classes of Germany, the medical community, professors, the teachers all across the society. They chose silence to protect themselves and their families. They chose silence, but Bonhoeffer could not remain silent as the savagery of Nazi power destroyed not just Europe, but almost the entire world. Bonhoeffer and all Germans had to make a choice. A choice I pray we ourselves will never have to make. Bonhoeffer had elderly parents, grandparents, several brothers, and a twin sister. He created an illegal underground seminary to train future leaders of an anti-Nazi church. But most poignantly of all, he was engaged to be married. If Bonhoeffer joined the Nazi resistance, his family, all of them, including his students, would be in danger of arrest, torture, and death. Nevertheless, even though he had been influenced by Mahatma Gandhi and had actually become a pacifist, there were not many pacifists in Germany. That did not go well. But he, in fact, his heart was opened by Gandhi, and he, in fact, did become a pacifist. Dietrich Bonhoeffer felt he had no choice but to join the resistance and become part of the plot to assassinate Hitler. Now, if you don't know anything about Germany, you need to know one fact about them. Obedience was central to everything they did. That you've always obeyed the person above you, and that person obeyed the person above them. And so there was this chain of obedience that ran through the society from the smallest child all the way to the chancellor of the country. So again, we ask the question, what would it look like? What would it look like if we loved God more than anything else? Back to Deuteronomy 6, again we read, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind." But, that's not all. There is an addition. Jesus took this command that comes all the way from the Old Testament, the very beginning of the Old Testament. He took this command and he added something to it. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and all your mind. But now this addition, and your neighbor as yourself. So to love God requires you to love neighbor. In Bonhoeffer's case, following God's command in Luke 14 as well as Deuteronomy 6 meant that God intended us to love his neighbor as himself, even if to all the world his actions looked like he hated his family because he put them in mortal danger. I mean, you can just hear the conversation, the discussion around the table. Dietrich, if you do this, you're putting us all at stake. Mom, grandfather, grandmother, your own twin sister, the people we know, our best friends, all the kinds of the upper classes of Germany. You are putting a lot of people at risk by going and involving yourself in this plot. Don't do it. And you can almost hear them say, "Do you hate us that you would do this? That you would sacrifice the lives of the people who love you the most and the people that God tells you that you should love?" In Bonhoeffer's case, following God's command in Luke 14 as well as Deuteronomy 6 meant to love God as he loved his neighbor. Even if to the whole world his actions looked like he hated them, because he put them in mortal danger. It was Dietrich Bonhoeffer's love of God and neighbor that propelled him to return to Germany. from the safety of the United States where he had been teaching. In his return to Germany, he put his entire family, students, and fiancé at risk. I believe that this is what Jesus meant when he said that to be his disciples, we must be ready and able to demonstrate our love for God by loving our neighbors, even at the cost of our own lives. Dear fellow Christians, can you follow Jesus and demonstrate to all the world that nothing is more important to you than loving God and loving your neighbor? I leave the question open. Amen.